Guilt freak out, I am not back, but The Rock was back this week. Can you believe that? But then he's gone. But I'm always here each and every week to kick off the show. The podcast is a day late, but we won't be a dollar short. Because if we are, it'll be Chris Walder's fault. Do you understand that, Chris Walder?
Hey, man, I'm like Snitsky. It's never my fault.
There he is, Chris Walder. And before we get into all the wrestling hullabaloo, congratulations to Mr. Chris Walder in his Raptor life, getting on the Fan 590 this week, talking some Toronto Raptors. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you. Hold your applause. I know I'm world famous now. The entire city, nay, the entire world knows who I am based on that one appearance. So, no autographs, please.
Okay, and now I will burst the bubble a little bit, saying to our American viewers, the Fan 590 is the largest sports station in Canada, in Toronto. So it's a big deal for Chris Walder. So we congratulate him. Once upon a time, I was on that very network, and I remember it was a big deal. And I'm sure it is the same for one Mr. Walder.
Well, just write about the most popular player on the Raptors getting traded, and you'll probably get back on the radio, too, because that's how I landed it.
What did you say? I don't even know this.
I wrote a Bleacher Report article. It was like the biggest changes for the Toronto Raptors heading into the upcoming season. And the last point I made was about Amir Johnson and Masai Ujiri possibly trading him at some point. And then they were like, they emailed me, the producer, and he's like, yeah, me and Jeff, Jeff Samet, who was the host of the show, we both read your article, we absolutely loved it, we want to talk about it on the show. And I was like, oh, geez. And there was even a half an hour segment where they like built up the article and they had people call in and answer, would you trade Amir Johnson? And he read all of my points, and I was worried because, man, he just basically said my entire article. What the hell am I supposed to talk about?
Yeah, we got heat now because Amir is my guy, you know that, right?
I know, you're going to powerbomb me, aren't you?
I'm very upset because in the intro for my basketball podcast, we have Amir Johnson wooing like Ric Flair.
I don't want a handicap match with you and Amir against me, man. That's not fair. I don't like those odds.
No, it's not good for you. He can throw chops like Ric Flair, too, let me tell you.
Woo!
Indeed. So we get back to wrestling that way. It was a big week in wrestling, as Randy mentioned off the top. Some guy named The Rock showed up on Monday, and he pretty much stumped the whole wrestling world, because not a lot of people were expecting this to happen, and I don't know. I wrote an article about it. I'm always happy to see The Rock back, and I think it's a great thing when he is. But I think the use of him, I found a little bit odd and strange, basically considering this is a one-off. He's not going to be back anytime soon. I mean, even on the 15th SmackDown, they didn't have him live. It was a tape segment from the same night at Raw with Stephanie and Hunter, which we'll get into later. But first and foremost, what did you think about using The Rock with Rusev? Were you a fan of that or no?
Well, first of all, his surprise return, he did a lot of that during the 2000s. He even made an appearance during the Diva Search segment. He came out with Eugene and Jonathan Coachman. So he's a master of disguise. He loves the surprises. He loves coming out when you least expect it. So I thought it was cool. But again, it didn't really serve much of a purpose other than maybe possibly give a rub to Rusev, maybe get the ratings up for that segment. You know, social media blew up. The Rock is on Raw. You got to tune in. And then the ratings came out, and he didn't really raise them that much. But it is what it is. I enjoyed it, you know, but it kind of showed that The Rock is a part-timer, and he's heads and tails above everyone else on the roster, because if it wasn't for The Rock, Raw would have been a total disaster.
Well, Dean Ambrose did his part. We'll get into that later. But, you know, the Rock, I just think there was a person that was screaming out needing The Rock, and they could have used it, and they didn't. And that's Roman Reigns, who's out right now with an injury. We were supposed to have an update on his condition. That segment lasted, what? I didn't have a stopwatch out, but it didn't last a minute, did it?
It was shorter than The Rock's entrance.
Yeah.
It was roughly 45 seconds.
Yeah, like, it didn't last at all. And my whole thing would have been, because I know for a fact that Reigns was in town in New York that weekend.
Right.
And he probably shot that segment live, let's be honest. He was probably in the backstage of the Barclays. He was not via satellite. I would have had Reigns come out, and everyone knows he's injured and he can't fight. And if you want to use Rusev, fine. Have Rusev come out, go to attack him, and out comes The Rock. there you go. And, you know, The Rock comes and helps out his family member and says that The Rock is going to help Roman Reigns get back to 100%. And he leaves a message for the Authority. You may never know when, you may never know where, but I will always have Roman Reigns' back. Simple.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah, I think it works, and you're not burying Roman from it. You're actually elevating Roman. And at some point down the line, Roman Reigns can get sick of this as The Rock pops in and out and eventually says, I don't need you anymore, and Roman Reigns is a heel, and you have a great program with The Rock.
I would love to see the Roman Reigns and The Rock do battle, though, but I think at this time, I mean, look, I'm still kind of ticked off by the way they used Roman on Raw, frankly, because they hyped his thing up for a week. They said Roman will be on Raw to update the fans on his progress from his injury, and he sat there in the dark for 45 seconds, and then that was it.
Yeah, I mean, Sam Roberts had a better interview with him on Friday.
I really like that one.
Yeah, I mean, Sam Roberts, incidentally, Sam Roberts knocking it out of the park lately. You know, we're not in the habit of promoting other people's stuff, but when it's good, we like to. And Sam Roberts had a great interview with Roman Reigns. Also had a great interview with Triple H this week.
Oh, I didn't see that one. What did they talk about?
Oh, this one is really good. Sam literally asked the question that every fan has at least contemplated or thought themselves, which is, obviously, Hunter is in charge of the NXT brand, and everyone loves NXT. And he asked him a two-part question. How do you feel about the fact that people love the NXT brand so much? And is it frustrating to you the fact that you know, it's actually being perceived as better than Raw, or is that a good thing? And Triple H gave a very hum and ha an answer and said he appreciated all the love for NXT and all the things he said in the past about, you know, when these guys come up, about it being like his children. And that he just tries to produce a show with NXT that he would like and that he would want to watch. And then he talked about the fact that Raw is a much different animal. It's 3 hours, and there are many masters to serve with Raw that aren't present there for NXT. But clearly that was the burning question that a lot of fans wanted to know, and Sam Roberts asked that question, and he got a pretty good answer from Triple H, and one where Triple H, I think, wasn't really prepared for the question, so I think you got a pretty honest answer out of Triple H out of it. So Sam Roberts getting some things done.
I didn't think a lot of wrestling journalists would have the balls to ask him that question, because Sam is absolutely right. NXT right now is the superior product. It's the superior brand, and I bet Triple H kind of wanted to beat around the bush without saying, you know what, Vince is more in control of the weekly television, and I have more hands-on with NXT, and that's a better product, and I'd like to give myself a pat on the back.
Yeah, I mean, Hunter's very diplomatic with all that stuff. I think deep down he has to feel really good about it. I mean, obviously, what he's done with that NXT brand and the Performance Center has exceeded everyone's wildest expectations, I think. To the point, the Performance Center is going to be in the upcoming video game. I think that's fantastic. Not just for the fact of promoting the Performance Center, but some of these guys are actually getting in the video game. Sami Zayn, Bo Dallas, a couple others are in there as well.
Adrian Neville.
Yeah, Adrian Neville, Bray Wyatt.
Even Bill DeMott is in the game.
Yeah, Bill DeMott is in the game, which is a whole other story. But, you know, I think it's great. And kudos to Sam. Those are great interviews. If you don't know by now, he is Not Sam on Twitter. And so is his YouTube account, where you can find those interviews and a ton of great other ones that he's done over the years. Really one of the best interviewers, I think, out there today doing interviews with professional wrestlers. And
next to you, James Borbath.
Well, you know, I don't get the WWE guys. I do the best I can with the guys that come on. But, no, Sam has been doing it for, I want to say at least five years now that I can recall. I first came across Sam Roberts, and funny for us in Canada, because you think Sam Roberts, you think the musician, not the broadcaster. But Sam Roberts, the wrestling journalist / Opie and Anthony star, much different from Sam Roberts, the musician.
Yeah, no gold records in Sam's future.
But nice hair, clearly.
Very nice hair. He's on that Carlito grind, the big fro going on.
Yeah, like he has more hair than the two of us combined.
That is, that's not saying much.
That isn't. But anyway, so other than that with Raw, The Rock showed up, and literally the 2 hours prior to that was some of the most awful stuff I have seen in what has been really a month and a half of a lot of awful stuff on Raw. Other than Dean Ambrose, I can't think of a thing that I liked about Raw other than that.
I can't even remember half of it because I kind of blocked it out of my brain at that point. I was on Twitter that night covering the show, and I was just on the brink of saying this might be the worst Raw I've seen. And I remember saying that, you know, a couple of weeks prior, and then a couple of weeks prior to that. And I couldn't believe WWE was continuing on the downward slope of mediocrity. And mediocrity is me being nice, because it's actually a lot worse than that. And then The Rock comes out, and everyone's like, oh, all they want to talk about is the People's Champion and how he saved the show. But honestly, you're right, man. The 2 hours leading to that were just garbage.
Yeah, it was terrible. I mean, we had a bull versus a gator. We had, like, just this nonsensical Total Divas stuff. We had Brie Bella having her sister, or sorry, Nikki Bella having her sister Brie go through all these matches that Stephanie put her through.
One hand behind her back and she beat Summer Rae. One friggin' hand. But Brie Bella.
I want to tell you though, that knee that ended that match, boy, that looked like legit in a shoot. Oh, man.
Right in the kisser.
Summer Rae took a blow there. But, you know, as our friend Court Bauer says, the Divas division often can be the closest thing to shoot wrestling that we will see. And he's correct. That happens quite frequently in the Divas division.
It was still the sense behind it. Just one hand behind her back. I hated it. But the knee, yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know what the heck is going on. One thing we did have confirmed, though, speaking of interviews that went down this week, there had been all the talk and all the dirt sheets, but Nikki Bella, in an interview with Peter Rosenberg, basically confirmed, it is true, no Total Diva can win the Divas title. That is a rule. It's real.
That should only hurt the feelings of maybe Natalya and Naomi, because everyone else should be nowhere near that belt. Maybe, I mean, Nikki, I suppose. But
Nikki Bella thinks she should be.
Well, she's a pretty decent heel, and she's gotten a lot better in the ring. She's not on the same level as, you know, Paige or AJ Lee, but she's not as much of a disaster as her sister is.
Yeah, that's true. Brie Bella is, I mean, if she wasn't married to Daniel Bryan, where would she be?
Thank God for those yes chants, man, because even Brooklyn was giving her some love with those.
Yeah, that's about all she gets. She gets the yes chants, and that's it. I mean, she gets no reaction when she comes out. She gets no reaction when she's wrestling. She gets some yes chants at the end when she wins. That's about it.
Worst entrance music in the company, and that's saying something, because Cesaro is around.
Yeah, with the old air siren, and, you know. One thing that WWE tried to promote this week, and I don't know if you took the time out to see it. I took the time to see some of it. 15 years of SmackDown. They tried to make SmackDown into a big deal. In the end, it wasn't much of a big deal.
Was it the actual SmackDown or the Edge and Christian thing after Raw?
Oh, no, the Edge and Christian thing was fantastic. I watched that as well on the network. But the actual 2 hours of SmackDown this week, it was different, and we had a little few fun segments, but by and large, it didn't make me change my mind about how I feel about SmackDown.
People power! That's what I wanted to see. Him and Teddy Long, man, it was good to see those guys back, but after that, it just kind of spiraled into just a regular episode of SmackDown, and then this really crazy comic book character-esque 15-man tag team or 16-man tag team match with Los Matadores and Slater Gator and, you know, Sheamus and all these guys that can't seem to get away from all these multiple-person tag team matches, and then it was kind of lame, but what else were you going to do?
And how many segments did that thing last?
Enough.
Like, that was when I tuned out of SmackDown, and I kept coming back, and that match was still there. It was still there. It was like, when does this end? Please, end this, please.
Hey, and you know the most infamous streak in WWE right now came to an end. Adam Rose suffered his first loss. Womp womp.
You mean he hadn't lost?
Yeah, they even said that on the show. Kane gave Adam Rose his first loss.
Wow, I had no idea.
I think I could have sworn that he had lost before, but that's what they said on the show.
Clearly, he does not promote it as well as Bo Dallas, because I know when Bo was winning.
Well, yeah, he was saying it was like 16 and Bo or something. I mean, what kind of crazy pun could you have made for Adam Rose?
He's now on a new streak, by the way, Bo Dallas. He
Bo
is
Dallas,
three and Bo against Mark Henry.
Oh yeah, who was booked as a face in that match? Hasn't he been booked as a heel lately?
I don't know. Like when Henry attacked him in the backstage a couple weeks ago. That felt to me like a double turn. I know they're not going to book it that way, but it felt that way.
Yeah, well, they forgot about that on SmackDown anyways.
Yeah, because Bo Dallas just got jumped like when he was being interviewed by Renee Young and just totally got taken out entirely.
Their theory is no one watches SmackDown, so we can book anyone as many times as we want as a heel, as a face, as a tweener, whatever. It doesn't matter.
And that's the thing. I think this whole thing about 15 years of SmackDown, it made me realize how far down this show has gone. Like, I mean, this was a show that at one time literally had more viewers than Raw. Because being on national TV and not on cable, they literally had more viewers than Raw. During a time when Paul Heyman was running it, it was arguably the superior brand. Yet, through its history, other than maybe for the first couple years, it has always been treated like the B-show redheaded stepchild of the WWE.
Well, when they killed the brand extension, I think that kind of killed SmackDown in the process as well, because there were specific stars, big stars, that you could only watch during the show. I mean, I remember when they first had the big draft, and, you know, they took The Rock and Hulk Hogan and Kurt Angle and he who shall not be named, Chris you-know-who, but... I really loved that because, you know, it gave you a reason to tune into SmackDown. You weren't going to see those guys on Raw, and, you know, it kind of dwindled down after that. They just basically had the World Heavyweight Championship there, and then they obviously merged them together again. So now there's really no reason to watch it. And then the spoilers, too, because you can just read what happens ahead of time.
Yeah, and the news came out. Another thing confirmed this week, SmackDown was rumored to be on the move to Thursday. That is, in fact, happening, but just a little later than people thought. The WWE smartly does not want to go head-to-head with Thursday Night Football. They would prefer to wait till January, where the USA is launching some new shows, which I'm sure will be terrible, and has asked... Sci-Fi is launching some new shows, which will be even worse. SmackDown is moving over to Thursday nights, it looks like.
I don't know why they should worry about Thursday Night Football, because it's been complete, utter blowouts for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, but still, with it being on national TV on CBS, I can see their point of being a little bit concerned with having to go head-to-head with that. I don't see...
Fair enough.
You know, like in theory... They were beefing up the Thursday night schedule. Like, I know the matchups haven't worked out, and if you're an NFL fan, you can have a more in-depth knowledge of this, but in theory, on paper, the matchups were supposed to be good for Thursday Night Football. It hasn't panned out like that, but if I saw that on paper and I was the WWE, not that Vince knows about football or Hunter, but I'm sure someone in that company does, and they said, hey, look, guys, these games could actually draw some pretty decent numbers. We might not want to do this.
Well, it is what it is, I suppose. I don't think the ratings are really going to be altered, you know, too harshly, or I don't think it's going to be on a positive upswing either. I think it's just a new day, and it's just going to remain the same.
Well, TNA certainly ran from Thursday Night Football in a
hurry.
Yeah,
they did, yeah.
We do have a little TNA news to kick around, so why don't we kick it around now?
Sure, let's just kick it right in the butt and then out the front door.
Well, you know, Dixie Carter was on Twitter. So, you know, every TNA story seems to start this way. So Dixie Carter was on Twitter and she said, okay, here's one. Bound for Glory is happening in Japan. Most people are not aware of this. In fact, on Japanese time, it might be happening right now, Chris Walder.
That's true. Yeah.
It could be going on as we're talking or as people are listening to this podcast, and no one really knows.
Best promotion ever.
It will appear on tape delay here in Canada, the United States, and elsewhere, I believe on Sunday night. That is the rumor. But one of the things that Dixie Carter said on Twitter was maybe at Bound for Glory. Are you ready for this, Chris Walder?
Yes, sir.
Dixie Carter thinks the TNA promotion might find their next Eddie Guerrero.
What?
Yeah, Eddie Guerrero apparently is Japanese.
He is.
Oh, well, I guess. I don't know. Like, Eddie never wrestled in Japan that I recall, or has, like, this long lineage of Japanese wrestling tied to him, so I don't get that statement.
Have I been lied to my entire life? Eddie Guerrero is Japanese?
Maybe he lied, cheated, and stealed his way to Japan, and only Dixie knows. I have no idea. But, no, you know, like, it was recently an anniversary of Eddie Guerrero's, I think it was his birthday this week, was it not?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, Dixie thinks, oh, she'll be cute and smart and makes a stupid statement like that. And more just TNA gobbledygook. Rumors have come out that TNA extended the olive branch or the opportunity for one CM Punk to come join the fold. And my, oh, my. I mean, I don't care if CM Punk ever comes back to WWE. If he does, obviously I'd be happy. But I would trade that almost to have the phone conversation between CM Punk and TNA where he laughs in their faces at their offer. I think I would trade a CM Punk comeback just to hear that.
Well, it was either that or Punk just saying, yeah, uh-huh, all right, yeah, okay. And then when the conversation is over and Dixie makes her offer, he's just like, well, I don't know. Let's get back to you in maybe a year or two.
Why don't you talk to my attorneys? They're a little tied up with Vince McMahon at the moment. But when they're done with that, I'm sure they'll be happy to talk to you. But no, the funniest thing of all is, TNA had CM Punk in their company. He was on TNA.
He was, yeah.
And they let him go. Like, they let him get away, and it calls to mind a greater issue, and I think it brings this whole TNA thing to a head and what it's really all about. TNA can have all the talent in the world they want. They don't know how to promote it, and they don't know how to cultivate it, and they don't know how to use it the same way, even though WWE right now, don't get me wrong, their product right now is terrible, but they know how to make stars. TNA has no idea how to make stars.
That's why I wouldn't really care if they even landed CM Punk. I think it might pique my interest for maybe a week or two, but after that, it's like, I get the reminder in the back of my head that it's TNA, and they've proven time and time again that they have zero idea what they're doing. They've had major stars there before, you know, Sting. They still have Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy, who are big names in the wrestling industry, and they've just kind of been withered down to nothing in a company that's, you know, on the verge of going under.
The only way that it would be interesting to me is if CM Punk literally ran the company behind the scenes and booked it and picked the talent and did everything.
The problem with that is that he would book himself as the main guy for the existence of the company.
Oh, you mean like Jeff Jarrett did?
Yeah, as an ego thing.
You mean like Jeff Jarrett did for like half of TNA?
He would just be the new incarnation of Jeff Jarrett.
No, but in all seriousness, I think it would be interesting to see what Punk would do in a situation where he had control of building a roster and stuff like that, because I think you'd get a very interesting wrestling product. I think he's learned a hell of a lot from Paul Heyman. I think he knows a hell of a lot about wrestling, and you know, it'd be interesting. I think that would be an interesting idea. Granted, that's not where CM Punk is heading these days. Other rumors about Punk are coming from Dave Meltzer that apparently at least it's been pitched to him, the idea of doing a reality show, and not just like any reality show, a reality show on like a major network television property. So that's something. If that happens, I can't imagine what CM Punk would be doing, mind you, because he just doesn't scream reality TV to me. Like, could you imagine right now if AJ Lee was on Total Divas, if CM Punk had to be a part of that?
That would not go over well.
That would be, I would, I think that would be some of the most compelling stuff we'd ever seen on Total Divas.
They would look so miserable on that thing.
I don't know. I really don't. It would be interesting. But he just doesn't strike me as the reality TV type. Although, if it was in the realms of stuff he likes, I could see it. Like, if it was something to do with, say, you know, like, the comics and that kind of thing, yeah, I could see that. Like, some kind of reality show, like, let's say, for aspiring comic artists or comic writers. CM Punk works.
Keeping up with the Punk Dashians. That would be a nice little spinoff.
No, that
maybe,
would...
Maybe Punk leaves AJ and hooks up with Chloe.
No, that's not happening, Chris Waller. That is so not happening. But I'm trying to be serious about this. I could see him in a role like that, in some kind of role for, like, crazy wacko sports fans, something like that. I could see certain things, but it definitely isn't something that jumps to the front of my mind, CM Punk in a reality show, but who knows, it could happen.
Well, the subject matter would have to be perfect, and you know, like, maybe punk music, comic books, you know, stuff he's actually interested in. I don't think he would do one on his life. I think it would take a lot for him to be convinced to pull that off.
Oh, that's never happening. I mean, clearly, his reaction to various things where people have delved into his personal life. I mean, this is a guy who took great offense to being called by his real name by anyone who wasn't a close personal friend of his. I mean, this is not a guy who's going to open up his life to cameras without having 100% total control, like he did with his DVD, Best in the World. If he doesn't have 100% control, it's not happening.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that there it is. That's your CM Punk news for what's out there as far as he goes. Let's get into Dean Ambrose, because I think it was a big week for Dean Ambrose. I think Dean Ambrose has officially landed in the main event upper tier super guys, if you will. I thought, you know, I liked what he did on Raw. It wasn't great, but it was certainly compelling, and I did want to leave with him and go to Coney Island when he left.
Did you even notice, like, the continuity of that whole thing where Ambrose comes down to the ring and his hair is soaking wet, and then when he gets on the subway, it's completely dry, like he just stuck a blow dryer in his hair for 10 minutes? I'd notice those little things, you know, having gone to journalism school and whatnot, and, you know, making things seamlessly transition, so that was pretty jokes. The way Raw ended, I thought, was kind of lame, and I said that on Twitter, too. The whole hot dog stand thing coming down and spraying Randy Orton and Kane with, like, ketchup and mustard and all the condiments known to man, I thought that was kind of stupid, but I know the kids love that stuff, James. They love it.
No, I liked it, too. I mean, that's my level of cheesy. I'm okay with that. That was fine with me.
Yeah, teach their own, I guess.
No, like, I mean, if you're going to go cheesy, I can live with that. I can't live with a bullfight and a gator. I can live with people getting squirted with hot dog sauce, ketchup, mustard, you know, sauerkraut, whatever. I mean, I think that's fine, and that was okay. I didn't have much of a problem with that. I'll tell you another big continuity thing that our good buddy Wei Ting from The Law picked up. Mm-hmm. When he goes down to get the subway, how on earth did a cameraman beat him down the stairs to record him coming down the stairs?
He knew exactly where Dean was going. It's almost as if it's scripted.
Yeah, like, as soon as he said he was going to get a hot dog, he anticipated that Dean Ambrose was going to Coney Island and was obviously going to take the subway there. Because, you know, he would have no other mode of transportation. And, yeah, so, and then AJ, she walked out on her match, so I assume she went to go join Ambrose to have a hot dog in Coney Island, and, maybe CM Punk was there, too.
It's these phantom cameramen, man. It's almost like the one that was in the back seat when Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella were trying to get away from Kane, and that was the cameraman already waiting in the car when they got in there.
Yeah, wrestling has this, the suspension of disbelief in terms of their camera work makes it a little bit wonky sometimes. Like, sometimes they acknowledge the fact the camera's there and they know it, and other times they act like it's not even there.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the classic problems in wrestling, and we won't get to solve that in one podcast, so we'll just move on to the rest of Dean Ambrose's week. he finished the show, I thought, strong, laying out Cena with a DDT that was Jake the Snake-like, because it was one of those ones where, hey, the guy didn't get up.
Well, that's going to be his finishing move moving forward, I suppose. I think WWE figured out that his finisher and Adam Rose's finisher were basically the same move.
And so they're letting Adam Rose keep his?
Yeah, pretty. I guess so.
Really?
Yeah.
Dean Ambrose is a megastar, don't you know?
And Adam Rose isn't?
No. Do you recall, we were going to get into this later, but do you recall the segment that Adam Rose was in?
No.
You do recall, you just don't want to remember.
I don't.
With Kathy Lee and Huda? You don't remember that disgraceful segment on Raw this week?
No, I just blocked that from my mind.
Yeah, you do remember. You just don't want to embrace
Please
it.
Please don't make me remember that segment.
I will say this. I found it great. Sometimes wrestling journalists go overboard and take the littlest things and turn them into stories that shouldn't be. That's my bugaboo with a lot of wrestling sites. No site in particular. I'm not picking on anyone. But one site in particular did pick on something that I thought was brilliant. And I believe the site was WrestleZone. And they brought up the fact that in a 1992 book, Kathy Lee Gifford, who was one of those people on Raw on Monday, she basically slagged the entire wrestling industry in her book and told these horrible stories of how she was horrified by the Bushwhackers and one ravishing Rick Rude when she was hosting Regis and Kathy Lee.
So, really? I did not read that.
Oh, it's a great story. Her just overreaction to the Bushwhackers and to ravishing Rick Rude is something to behold. It's like, hello, lady, these guys are acting. This is their job. They're performing a gimmick. Just like you perform like you're actually a human being on a talk show and have like $100 million worth of plastic surgery to look like you're a teenager when you're really like 60 or 90 or whatever Kathy Lee's running these days. It was so lame, but good on WrestleZone for pointing her out to be quite the fraud. And the other thing about that is, I found the whole segment ultimately unnecessary because you had Joan London come out, who, again, doesn't really belong in wrestling, but she is legitimately fighting cancer right now, and with the breast cancer awareness and all that, perfectly fine what she did. It was heartwarming, it was touching. Some people in a wrestling audience may not want that, but the WWE is behind this charity effort, and good on them, and that was a fine segment. We didn't need the other one.
Yeah,
there was no point to it.
They didn't mention breast cancer at all. They mentioned the Susan B. Anthony Foundation. But
Susan G. Coleman.
What did I say? Susan B.
Susan
Anthony.
B. Anthony. I don't know what they support, Walter. Maybe you can tell me.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to look up if Susan B. Anthony is even a person after this.
I think she is, but anyway.
The whole point of that segment was to have Hoda and Kathy Lee get a wine bottle smacked on their ass and then fall into the arms of the Rosebuds ringside and get carried off like a bunch of party animals.
Terrible. It was awful. And Adam Rose, he went from that to working with Stephanie on SmackDown. How the hell does that happen?
I'm telling you, man, future star, WrestleMania main event.
Vince hates him. You know that, right?
Well, as long as Stephanie loves him.
I don't even think Stephanie loves him. I think she was just playing along. But Stephanie's dancing on SmackDown. Tremendous. I mean, this girl is awesome.
That's worth tuning in for right there.
Yeah, Stephanie's dancing and Dean Ambrose, quite frankly. Because we'll get back to him. That's where this all started.
Mm-hmm.
Dean Ambrose, I liked even more on SmackDown than I did on Raw. How he treated John Cena was absolutely tremendous. And it was somewhat downplayed by the fact that John pointed out the fact that he treated him that way, but I still loved it. He basically had no respect for John at all, and he was not even considering the fact that he could lose to him. I think that's great. I think more people should do that, as John Cena himself said. But the reality is, the part that John doesn't say is he doesn't allow that to happen, and that's the problem. But I think Dean Ambrose has broken through to an extent. That said, if Dean doesn't win this match at Hell in the Cell, that's going to be a blow that'll be interesting to see how fans react to it and how he survives it.
Well, the new stipulation they added to the match basically guarantees that Ambrose is going to win.
How do you figure?
Well, because the one thing I was worried about when they booked Ambrose versus Cena was that they were going to have their two top faces right now with Roman Reigns and Daniel.
Okay, hold on. We should mention what the stipulation is. It is now a contract on a pole match.
No holds barred,
yeah. No rules. Now go on, sorry. Just so people know what we're talking about in case they didn't watch SmackDown, which a lot of people don't.
Well, it's also up on WWE.com in case you ever visit that site. But, you know, what I said earlier, I was worried that with Cena and Ambrose going head-to-head, that one of them was going to have to lose cleanly. And with you only really two faces to work with right now, the last thing you want to do is bury one of them. So with the contract on a pole stipulation, you can have Cena lose, but he doesn't have to get pinned or submitted by Ambrose. You have Ambrose go to the main event against Rollins. Hell in a Cell, match of the year candidate right there, and then you leave Cena to apparently go one-on-one with Orton inside the cell, which we've had before. They haven't announced that yet, but word is that the loser gets Orton.
Yeah, there's some Randall Orton news we'll get into in a little bit, but you're awfully optimistic. May I remind you, one Jonathan Cena, or Cena, depending on how you say it, he has lost two pay-per-view matches in a row. You are proposing he will now lose three.
Well, I think there's going to be outside interference because they could have easily just said it's a contract on the pole match, but making it no holds barred, someone's getting involved.
Well, I don't know. I'd love to see it, but I have so little faith in the WWE. But that said, Dean Ambrose is on an incredible roll. I mean, He has smelled the blood in the water when Roman Reigns got hurt. It may be his buddy. They may have traveled down the road for 2 years or whatever it was. He smells the blood in the water, and he sees this as an opportunity for him to leapfrog his way to the top. And, you know, we talked a little bit about CM Punk. This is the closest thing you're going to see to CM Punk until Punk ever comes back. Because Dean Ambrose has a lot of the same qualities and characteristics in terms of Punk in how he maneuvers his way through the system. I think Dean Ambrose, he understands when opportunity is knocking for him, and he takes full advantage of it.
Yeah, and you can always make the comparison again to Stone Cold Steve Austin, which a lot of people have done in the past, you know, the anti-authority, going against the system kind of guy who just doesn't care about anything but himself, but fans dig that, and Ambrose is the closest thing we have to that right now, and he's the perfect foil to someone like John Cena, you know, all about the hustle, loyalty, and respect, and never give up attitude. You know, Ambrose is just kind of like an alternative to that, and it looks like fans are gravitating more towards Ambrose than they are at Cena at the moment.
Yeah, I'm talking the behind-the-scenes guy, though. Like, not the character. The character is much more like Stone Cold, I agree. But behind the scenes, it seems Ambrose is a real ambitious guy that knows when opportunity is being handed to him and takes full advantage of it.
Well, they could have also, I mean, Ambrose was still going to get a push regardless of Reigns, because I think this Rollins versus Ambrose storyline still has a lot of legs behind it, and it's arguably the biggest storyline in the company. You can't really get too invested in Cena versus Lesnar because Lesnar's never around. So Ambrose and Rollins is heads and tails above everything right now, and I can appreciate the fact that, like you said, Ambrose is kind of taking the ball and running with it, a ball that was originally in the hands of Roman Reigns.
Yeah, but I think he's just, as great as that feud has been, and it has been great, I think he has almost jumped the shark in terms of not only does he have this great feud, but now he's thought of as a major player in that. There's always those stories about when Vince would book Raw, there was, like, he'd have a list of five or six guys that was all he was concerned of.
Yeah.
Dean is on that list now. He's staying there. Like, he's not going away. There's no question about that. And I think when you compare what Seth Rollins has done with that opportunity in comparison to Dean Ambrose, I think Ambrose has outshone Rollins by miles.
That's not to downplay what Rollins has done, though. He's the biggest heel in the company.
Yeah, but I mean, just in terms of their performance and where where they are with their various entities, I think Rollins is still a guy that they don't have enough faith in to put out there on his own. Obviously, that's why we have Stooges 2.0 with Jamie Noble and Joey Mercury. I mean, it's not that Rollins isn't good, but I just don't think he's on the level that Dean Ambrose is on right now, where Dean Ambrose is just hitting on all cylinders.
Don't you think they're just trying to book Rollins as the cowardly heel, especially against a guy like Ambrose who's just so unpredictable?
Well, they are, but I mean, to an extent, like it's just, I just don't feel that they have the faith in Seth that they have in Dean.
No, I disagree, man. If they're booking the entire pay-per-view, Hell in a Cell, around Seth Rollins, they're having their two biggest faces go head-to-head so they can earn the right to face Rollins for not even his briefcase, not even a world championship, just to face him.
Yeah, but he's the third wheel in the angle.
No. Why would you say that? You think Cena's even ahead of him at this point?
Yeah, I think the whole idea of Ambrose and Cena feuding is the draw. It's not the, like, once we get there, if Dean is the guy that wins, then it all makes sense. But if we get John Cena and Seth Rollins, I don't think people care about that in the slightest.
Well, we're not going to get that, thank God.
Well, that's what you think, but that remains to be seen.
Hey, if there was ever a time to go with the main event of Ambrose and Rollins, now would be the time. You have no champion, you have no Lesnar, you have no one really else on the card to take away any steam from them. So this is it. And they made a lumberjack match, like, incredible. So just imagine what they can do inside Hell in a Cell. That might be the best one we've seen. You know, it could be on par with Taker, Triple H, even some of the older ones. So I'm looking forward to it, and I really do think it's going to happen.
And we will see. Anyway, what has happened, Chris Walder? Two people have gotten married this week. Michael Bennett and Maria Kanellis are now happily married after the bachelor party that they had at ROH, which apparently came off without a hitch. And even our buddy, who you missed last week because you weren't on the show, Adam Cole, was giving out cigars to people at this bachelor party. So good on Adam Cole.
I'm still disappointed that we weren't invited.
Well, if we had been to Chicago, I'm sure we could have worked it out.
I mean, like, really a part of this bachelor party thing. I mean, we could arrange a pretty sweet shindig, man. We got some numbers. We can make some calls. We can make things happen.
I disagree. I think Adam Cole can do a much better job than us. And, you know, it is what it is. But congratulations to the happy couple, the First Lady of ROH, and Michael Bennett, who, you know, we'll see what the future holds for those two kids. Because they, like Adam Cole, Michael's contract, I believe, comes up around the same time. So we will see. He has been a guy who for years, even before it was maybe the proper thing to say, was always a guy that people wondered about for the WWE. And Adam Cole, we've already heard feelers about where Adam Cole might be. And Adam, of course, kind of addressed those, but didn't really last week. But clearly a guy on the rise, Adam Cole. And he is doing his thing in Ring of Honor. And that's about all for Ring of Honor this week. Just wanted to mention the happy couple and happy that their marriage came off. And good on ROH for planning their whole scheduling around this. To do a Thursday show, which they normally wouldn't do, not to run Friday, allow everyone to kind of go to the wedding, you know, be a part of Mike and Maria's special day, and then run again on Saturday. And then, of course, there was all the hubbub about Michael Elgin this week, where Michael Elgin apparently quit the company, but maybe he hasn't, and a lot of craziness going on there. I'm not sure what to make of all that, to be quite frank.
It's definitely a work, though, right?
Not in the traditional sense that you think. Let's just put it that way.
Is there something you know that I don't know, James?
Well, initially I was told it wasn't a work at all. And now I've been told, well, it might be, but it might not be in the way that you think it's a work.
Oh, whatever that means.
it kind of means, it's hard to say it without saying it, but basically, let's just say, in order for it to be a work, all the parties would have to be in on it. When this started, all the parties were not in on it.
Really?
That's,
now we're talking. Now this is getting a little juicy.
Well, I'm just saying, that's what I've heard for whatever it's worth. That's what I've been told. And, you know, the story keeps changing, though. And bottom line, Michael Elgin should get this whole baseball player thing out of his system. And I think it will do a world of good for his wrestling career, because I don't think it's doing any good for his wrestling career right now.
It's hurting the trust with him and management, you think?
It boggles the mind that someone who's carrying a championship belt would talk about taking a absence the following spring. It just makes no sense. Like, it's not like Hogan, when he had the world championship, would say, "Oh yeah, I'm going off to make No Holds Barred, but I'll be back in 6 months."
Yeah.
Like, you don't do that. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I like Michael Elgin. I think he's a great guy. I think he's a great talent. But I just question some of the things that went on. And obviously, the issues with his visa trouble and all that, terrible. I mean, I felt bad for the guy. And Silesia Sparks is still going through that, as far as I know. And it's a terrible thing. But, this other stuff, these are preventable errors that just have happened. So, and his title reign just didn't work at the end of the day.
Yeah, we were surprised, because we were there when he dropped the belt, but logic kind of sunk in, and we were like, well, maybe it does make sense. Maybe it's just not his time. Maybe there's just a lot of other outside circumstances that just, you know, with the baseball stuff, and maybe he wasn't getting too over with as a champion. Put it on Jay Briscoe. He's proven, you know, make history, the second time champion.
Yeah.
So it all worked out in the end.
And he was the unfortunate guy who was holding the belt right after Kevin Steen left. And ROH can say what they like, and I love ROH, and they're a great company, and I think they're still doing good business.
Yeah.
But Kevin Steen leaving was a huge loss.
Oh, that hurt, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, it's the equivalent of John Cena breaking his arm and being out for 3 months for the WWE in terms of on scale. Like, for ROH's business model compared to WWE's business model, on scale, Kevin Steen was that big a star for that promotion.
He was their Cena.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's now in NXT, and he is getting ready to change his name, assumedly, and debut soon. So we look forward to seeing what will become of that. And we'll move it back to WWE, and a little bit about, what do you think of all this stuff with the Wyatts?
Well, with their video promos?
The whole idea of it seems like the gang is breaking up.
It seems that way. I mean, I called it last week. I figured, you know, they did the Luke Harper 1 week and then Eric Rowan the next. I really loved it. They even had the little teaser at the end. What was it? It's Coming. It had, like, written on in black marker on the belly of a woman or something. So I don't know what that means.
Little Johnny's coming back. That's what it means. Come on.
That could be it. You never know with the Wyatt family. But I'm interested. I think this time away from the ring has really kind of rekindled people's interest in the group. They were kind of going down the, you know, on a downward spiral just because they were losing a lot. The gimmick was wearing thin. A lot of people were thinking that Bray's promos were getting repetitive and they were just losing interest. So now, you know, you come back, you have this teaser and whatnot, and maybe they split up. I don't know. You know, especially in the promos, if you're paying attention, he's almost saying as if he's releasing Eric Rowan and Luke Harper out to do their thing. You know, I've taught them, you know, I've set them on the right path, and now they can do what they want. And there's even these rumors that the Ascension might be teaming up with Bray Wyatt sometime in the future. But I'm very curious to see what happens. Maybe we'll see them at Hell in a Cell, maybe not, you know, maybe an upcoming Raw, but the sooner the better, because I want to see where this is going.
And then I think we'll close out the show this week with it's never too early, Chris Walder, to start your WrestleMania rumors. So let's dig into a few of them. One of them says the main event is now locked in stone, but they do not know what that main event is. If you were going to bet, you know, your life savings on it, what do you think that main event is that is locked in stone now?
Well, for the last couple of WrestleManias, we've basically had three main events for each one, or three highly profiled matches. And right now, I kind of have my card laid out. If you were going to be a betting man and place money on what these matches would be, I think right now you still have to go with Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns in the main event for the title. As soon as Reigns comes back, I think he's one of the entrants in the Royal Rumble. You have him win that, go on to WrestleMania, take the gold off of Lesnar. I also foresee The Rock versus Triple H. I think they teased that on the 15th anniversary episode of SmackDown. Right now, I can't really think of anyone else who would go up against Triple H, and if they can have some sort of an agreement in place with The Rock, you know, who told TMZ, I'm not wrestling at WrestleMania, I don't buy that for a second. If he's healthy enough, he's going to do it. And then when Daniel Bryan comes back, I think him versus John Cena Part 2 is a great way to get those guys into the main event spot as well. So, and then you also have the Sting, you know, is he coming back to face The Undertaker? But I think those three or four matches right now are the safest of bets. But again, it's WWE. It could be anything else at this point, too.
Okay, I said the main event, not the whole entire card.
I have the card. I can do the entire card if you want, James.
No, that's quite all right.
Lee versus Nikki.
Yeah, Hell in the Cell 2.
Exactly.
Oh, my. Yeah, that lousy rumor has started that those two are going to fight in Hell in a Cell. If that happens, all bets are off for everything. But anyway, getting back to the point here, here's the thing, though. If they go Rock Triple H, I agree with you, though. I think we are still Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar. But what's going to be interesting in that is if we have a healthy Daniel Bryan for the Royal Rumble, and assuming we still have a healthy and very over Dean Ambrose, boy, those are two big hurdles for Roman Reigns to avoid, get past. And by the way, WWE probably hasn't learned their lesson from last year, because where's the Royal Rumble this year? Oh, it's in Philadelphia. That is not a smarky crowd at all, is it?
Well, they're not going to have Batista win again, so they'll dodge that bullet anyways.
Well, like I said, you told me I was wrong. Batista's never coming back. You realize this.
Hey, do Guardians of the Galaxy Part 2. I'll watch it.
No.
Be an actor. Never come back.
No, but he's not coming back. I told you he wasn't going to come back, and he's not coming back.
No, I believe you.
Yeah, but at one time you didn't, though. And
now you convinced me.
Yeah, he is not coming back. It's over. So there you go. Score one for me. But yeah, this whole idea of Rock Triple H, me being an old guy, and I don't know, maybe it's me, I'm not all that compelled to see Rock Triple H again.
Really?
You as someone younger, do you have a different opinion of it? Because I could care less if we see Rock and Triple H.
I could appreciate it for nostalgia purposes, and it's one of those feuds that never got a singles WrestleMania match, and there's a whole bunch of other ones that never saw the light of day, like Shawn Michaels versus The Rock, you know, Undertaker versus Steve Austin. So, it's, you know, Rock versus Triple H, I can get behind that. They would have to build up one hell of a storyline. I mean, you know, like I said earlier, the tease on SmackDown, maybe they were just messing with us, saying, well, this is one of the first WrestleMania matches you can kind of sign, seal, and deliver. But, you know, it's Rock Triple H. I mean, the match would be incredible.
Oh, it would be great. And I mean, one of the points that would also be clearly in The Rock's favor, he's not getting injured facing Triple H, unless it's just his own body breaking down. Because Triple H, probably one of the safest workers in that company.
Agreed.
And, you know, dare I say this, but the legendary John Cena did not get The Rock through healthy in their last encounter. So, you know, that's been a bit of a problem.
Yeah, the last thing you want to do is injure The Rock, Mr. Hollywood.
Well, yeah, no, but I mean, it's been a problem for The Rock in the sense of movie makers now don't really like him doing this wrestling stuff now. It's on their radar of things that they don't really want him doing. So it's a big deal. But, you know, that said, I've been there, done that. I've seen it. I know it'll be good. I'm not saying it won't be, but I just won't be emotionally invested in it all that much. Another big rumor that's kicking around is Stone Cold is at least teasing the idea that he would come back, mm-hmm. and that he is training. For what, though?
One more match.
Yeah, but with who, for what? Like, you've just railed off all these matches that, you know, he can't be a part of. Like, let's see, who have you used in those matches you reeled off? You used John Cena, you used already, right?
Yeah. Oh, you're assuming that I would have him at WrestleMania 31.
No, no, I agree. It's probably a much better idea to have him at the next WrestleMania.
Yeah, exactly.
For a lot of reasons. But this rumor, even though it's not really all that specific, sees him starting to train and make a comeback now.
Well, maybe he's just getting an early start on things. It's going to take him at least a year to get back into ring shape.
Well, no, he said on his podcast he can do it in 3 months.
Well, you know, he probably could, but at the same time, maybe he's just kind of laying the groundwork. Maybe we see him at WrestleMania 31, and that he builds up something for WrestleMania 32. It makes no sense for him to compete at this year's WrestleMania, because it looks like there's going to be so many other things involved. And if he does WrestleMania 32, which is in Dallas, right?
That's supposed to be Texas Stadium, and boy oh boy, I'm legitimately concerned if the WWE can sell that out.
If you have Austin in the main event, you probably could.
Yeah, they need, like, what I'm saying is they need all the star power in the world. I've said on this podcast before, I think there's one match that you need for that card, and you're miles and miles away from getting it, and that's Austin Punk.
Yes.
And,
but if you can't do that, what's your next bet with Austin?
That's the thing. That was going to be my next question for you. If not Punk, who is the feud for Austin? I know Paul Heyman has talked about this idea of Austin and Brock Lesnar. I don't like that for Austin's own personal health, basically. I think Brock Lesnar would kill him. Like, legitimately hurt him.
That's the thing, though. There's only two matches. If you can't get Punk, which looks like it might not happen, the only other two opponents you can have with Austin that could realistically sell out WrestleMania is Lesnar and then John Cena.
You know what? Years ago, I probably wouldn't have been into it. With all the little comments and digs that Austin makes about John Cena on his podcast and whatnot, I could actually get into an Austin-John Cena match.
But wouldn't they build that feud up the same way they did with The Rock, where there's just, like, realistic, you know, not beef, because it's been proven that Austin and Cena actually do get along. I think he even had Cena on a podcast, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, but he was even... When John was on, he was even critical of him to his face.
Right.
I mean, Stone Cold pulls no punches. And the great thing about the Stone Cold character is he doesn't really need much of a reason. I mean, he literally has stunnered everyone under the sun for no reason at all, just to say, I can. Like in Stone Cold Steve Austin's mind, any feud that he ever has is just simply to prove that he is the greatest wrestler ever in the history of the WWE. And clearly, that would be one of the storylines of this match. It would be the biggest money-drawing wrestler in the history of the company versus the current or fading face of the company now in John Cena. I think that's obviously part of the angle if you go with those two.
And what's with John Cena, too? He teased on Twitter that he has a big announcement to make on Monday morning.
Okay, his big announcement on
Monday... Do you not know this?
No, I did not. I don't follow John Cena because, really, it just annoys me.
No, it's just a story I saw, and he said it's been years in the making, and I say it on Monday morning, or I reveal it on Monday morning. I see the first couple of tweet responses are people asking, "Oh, are you finally turning heel, buddy?"
It's gonna be something lame.
It's gonna be the decision, like LeBron James. Oh, Cena, I've decided to take my talents to heel them.
No. It's gonna be something really lame. Like, he'll have his own clothing line. He'll have some John Cena merchandise making money. Trust me, it'll be something lame.
Oh, I know it will be. I'm trying to speculate because, you know, it could be anything at this point. We got to keep the fans involved here.
Well, one thing was interesting, though. That same interview that Nikki Bella did where she confirmed that the Divas title cannot be won by a total diva, she also mentioned the idea of wanting to work heel against John, but eventually teaming with him.
Right.
That, in all honesty, we joke about how awful the Bellas are and all of that, but if you're going to get a good use out of Nikki Bella, that might be it. I mean,
that helps my John Cena versus Daniel Bryan thing heading into WrestleMania. If those two have a match, you can easily get Nikki and Brie involved. Maybe even do a mixed tag team match ahead of time.
It's just the whole idea of how do you legitimately turn the guy who is, whether you like it or not, has been made into the biggest good guy, rah-rah superhero, into a bad guy. And the easiest way for that, to me, is the simplest thing that everyone can relate to. The good guy meets the bad girl, and the bad girl makes the good guy bad. It's pretty simple, and it happens in everyday life every single day.
Are people going to buy into John Cena's first heel turn in almost forever to be the result of Nikki Bella?
Over a woman?
Yeah.
That looks like that?
Well, yeah, we'd all turn heel for that.
That's my point. It's a real-life situation that everyone can relate to, and I think given some of the lame other ways you could go with it, it makes better sense than a lot of things, but I find it hard that we'll ever see John walk across that line. I mean, even when he came out on SmackDown, he goes all the way up into the stands, hugs some Make-A-Wish kid, does a little video with him with the father and all that. And it's like, you know, they just go out of their way to highlight the fact that he does all this stuff that it makes it almost impossible to turn him.
You know what? That would be a good article for your site. You know, Condo on the Moon. At the peak of their stardom, at the peak of their faceness, so to speak, who is the bigger star, bigger face, John Cena or Hulk Hogan? You can make a compelling case for Cena.
Yeah, I think they're pretty much on par. And then, of course, I guess to close out this discussion, how ridiculous is it that Hulk Hogan still wants to wrestle a match?
Yeah, he wants a retirement match at WrestleMania 31. Oh, bless his heart.
Against John Cena, against, like, anybody.
That would be awful.
He wants to fight John Cena. Like, really, Hulkster? Like, God, you know, how nice of you to want to work with a mid-carder.
Yeah, elevate the stars. I mean, John Cena needs the proverbial rub at this point. I mean, otherwise he's screwed. He's on it. It's John Cena.
I don't get it sometimes. And we don't have time to get into this really, but Chris Jericho is going to be back sooner than later. And I think that's a horrible thing because I thought his last run was terrible.
He hasn't even been gone long enough to say it's a new run again.
Well,
he's been gone for like a month.
The thing is, they're so hard pressed for talent that they need him for their big European tour.
Ugh.
That's basically the reason for it.
Who does Jericho go up against now?
Who knows? Randall Orton. We do have to do one more thing before we go because I did tease it earlier in the show and I don't want to leave people hanging.
All right.
Randall Orton news this week. Apparently, Randall Orton is now on the sweet, I don't have to do house shows, I'm kind of a big mucky muck old guy contract now with the WWE. So congratulations to Randall Orton on that. And if it means seeing less of him, I'm all for it.
You're very anti-Orton, aren't you?
I'm not anti-Orton as much as I'm anti the way they book him. Like, they literally have taken away all the steam from this guy. I mean, John Cena on SmackDown, one of John Cena's real funny jokes had the two baseballs because he said that's what Dean Ambrose has and Miz doesn't even know what those are. Well,
yeah.
Those have pretty much been taken away by Randy Orton, and it's been done by his association with Triple H. I mean, he can't outshine Triple H. It's just that simple. It's been proven over and over and over again. And whenever he has been paired with him, it has resulted in bad things, quite honestly. I mean, one of the worst WrestleMania main events, Hunter versus Randy Orton, it wasn't good.
Well, that and also it had to follow Shawn Michaels' Undertaker. It never stood a chance.
No, but I just mean, like... whenever these two are paired, it's never a good thing for Randy Orton. It never works out well. And, you know, when Randy Orton was at his best was when he was on his own, kind of in Evolution doing his Legend Killer gimmick.
Yeah.
That was the height of Randy Orton, and we haven't seen that guy in a long, long time.
He should have been booked as the face of the Authority, but that role has been bestowed upon Seth Rollins, and then Triple H is also ahead of him in the pecking order, too. Orton and Kane have basically become just as big a stooge as Mercury and Noble.
Oh, Kane, God. When are they going to let Kane retire? I'm going to say it every week. Like, when is it going to happen? Like,
oh, Kane. I want that soundbite of you saying, oh, Kane.
Yeah, it's like, we should just use it, like, as a bumper. Like, oh, Kane.
The most depressing soundbite ever.
Yeah, it's just like, whenever Kane gets mentioned, we'll just hit the button. Oh, Kane.
It'll be a recurring segment from here on out. Yeah. Welcome to Arcane.
Yeah. The Arcane moments of the week. Boy.
Oh, hey, please, let's do that.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what we should do, though? We have been doing this podcast a long time. We're over 30 podcasts now. I think this is number 32. We should do some fun weekly segments and have some fun. Because clearly wrestling is not going to provide the fun. I've come to that conclusion. We are in a lull right now, and there's not going to be a lot of fun. So we may have to start making our own fun.
I smell another homework assignment.
Yeah, we should come up with some ideas and touch base, and maybe we'll come up with ideas. Hey, if you have ideas for us out there listening, at Condo on the Moon, hit us with us. What do you want to hear us and Walder ramble on this podcast? We'd love to hear your ideas. And he is at Walder Sports 26 because Twitter.
No 26 now.
Oh, you've been unbanned.
I have been unbanned for weeks now.
I did not know that.
James, well, my little friend.
I'm older. Change is not my thing. Like, you made me change the once. Now you're telling me I got to change back.
Get rid of the 26. Jennifer Lawrence has forgiven me. I am back. Main account at Walder Sports.
Great, that's just good.
Only one S though, and I made it sound like there was 50 S's. Well, it's only at Walder Sports, not at Walder Sports.
Well, whatever. Type in Walder in sports, and a face will pop up. It'll look like Walder, and
a
click
beautiful
on
face.
It. Yeah. Well, whatever.
Mr. Famous Fan 590 Star.
Oh,
Chris
wow.
Walder.
Yeah.
I'm turning heel, James.
Oh, don't do that. Don't do the heel Rosenberg thing on this podcast. No, please no. Heel Rosenberg is as bad as babyface Cena. Let's put it that way.
There you go.
And now, we will never have Peter Rosenberg on this podcast, but that's okay. Although he does great interviews, too. But we put over Sam Roberts. We are Sam Roberts guys, not Peter Rosenberg guys.
We're all about the fro.
That's right. Sam Roberts, yes. Rosenberg, no. And like they care about us. Anyway, that is it for us, though. Hopefully you care about us. And we will be back next week, regular day, regular time. You ever watch those old Batman things?
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Exactly. The 60s Batman. Like, when you think of bad acting in wrestling, even the Bellas, well, maybe not even the Bellas, but almost anyone other than the Bellas compared to 60s Batman, they're not all that bad.
You know what? If you look back in the vault of these podcasts, I think I actually used that as one of our exits.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, wow. We'll have to, when we do the 100th episode and look back on things, or the 15th year of the podcast, we'll be sure to look for that one. So that said, we hope to be around another 14 and a half years, and we can celebrate like SmackDown did this week, and, basically do nothing all that special, and still say the show is special. Because every show is special, right, Chris Walder?
Yes, sir. Special, special, special.
The special Saturday show is done. We're back on Fridays next week. So adjust your lives accordingly, and we will talk to you then.
Ugh, Kane!